All right, we're beginning here 10 lines down on the top of Tzadi Bet Amud Aleph. Yesterday we left off with the scenario in which Reuven sold the field to Shimon without recourse, and then Shimon sold it back to Reuven with recourse. And we discussed the fact that the creditors of Reuven show up now and take the property away from Shimon, whether he has to then live up to that recourse back to Reuven. And in the end, Rava suggested that he would not have to live up to that, as opposed to Rami Bar Chama, because he did not accept upon himself, Shimon, the recourse if it happened because of Reuven. That's either because the lien of Reuven's creditors pre-existed the sale, and therefore when Reuven sold it to Shimon and then Shimon back to Reuven, it was as if they sold something that didn't belong to them, and therefore when the creditor of Reuven comes, there's no achrayut here because it didn't exist. The creditors preceded all of their claims. Or you could say that when Shimon takes responsibility, he takes responsibilities for factors that are outside of Reuven. He doesn't take responsibility for factors that are generated by Reuven himself. And the additional nuance that we discussed was that if they're creditors of Reuven's father, they are considered to be as if they are third parties and not as if they are creditors of Reuven. So now we have another scenario of Rami Bar Chama, which is Amar Rami Bar Chama, Reuven shemachar sadeh l'Shimon be'achrayut. In this instance, Reuven sold the field to Shimon with recourse, zakaf alav b'milveh, and Shimon didn't have cash to pay for it, so they established that it would be a loan. And then umeit Reuven. Reuven passes away, va'ata balchov du Reuven. And now the creditor of Reuven comes, because Tarif la Mishimon, he comes to grab the property out of Shimon's hands, upaisei bizuze. And instead of allowing the property to be taken, Shimon pays him off with cash. Dinahu, the din here should be, da'amrile bnei Reuven, children of Reuven can say, anan mitaltale shavak avun gabech. Our father left mitaltalim with you, which is the cash that he was obligated to pay to Reuven. Mitaltalim di atme, the Baal Chov lo mishtabde. And mitaltalim of the Yitomim are not encumbered to the creditors. So what happened here is, let's just break down the different pieces of the case. Reuven sells the land to Shimon, but he sells it with recourse. That means that if something happens to the land, then Reuven is responsible to replace it for Shimon. That's one. Number two is, Shimon did not pay for the land. He didn't have money to pay for the land. So therefore he, instead of paying for the land, he accepts it, and then Zakfan alav milveh, he borrows the money from Reuven. He takes out a mortgage with Reuven. So the seller of the land is also providing the financing for his purchase of the land. So Reuven finances Shimon's ability to purchase the land from Reuven. Tosafot over here talks about what was important about Zakvan alav v'milveh. Why is it important that they established that it was a loan? So he talks about, because otherwise we might have assumed that the cash that was deposited with Shimon, technically, because he has Reuven's cash with him, was really just a mashkon, was just collateral for the fact that if the land got taken out of Shimon's hands, that he would keep the cash as collateral. So once v'zakvan alav v'milveh, it makes it clear that the cash or the money that he owes Reuven is literally a loan and not simply a mashkon, collateral to ensure that the property stays with Shimon. Because if it was just collateral, then he could use that to cover the requirement of returning the land to the Baal Chov and then say, listen, I don't owe you guys any money anymore because it was a mashkon, it was just a collateral to ensure that I got my land. But once it's a milveh, then that money by Shimon is a loan. And now he has an obligation as a debtor to the Yitomim to pay that money back. And he can't automatically offset that against their obligation to provide recourse for the land that he purchased. That's why the scenario, according to Tosafot, is set up this way. That it's Zakfan alav bimilveh, to ensure that we know that this is really a sale that completed and not a sale that is awaiting the payment of cash, in which the cash is really collateral for the original sale. And therefore, the achrayut becomes important, because if the sale is not complete, then even without achrayut, there is achrayut, in a sense. Because the achrayut is only important once the sale is complete, that Reuven guaranteed that he would take on the recourse for anything that happens to the land. If the transaction was never completed, then it doesn't matter whether he accepted recourse or didn't accept recourse. Shimon would automatically have recourse over here by the mere fact that the transaction really wasn't complete, quote unquote, and that's why he could maintain the cash, I mean the loaned money, and just hand back the land, and he wouldn't be out anything. So that's number one. Number two is, in terms of Shimon's obligations over here, he does not have an obligation to the creditor of Reuven to pay him cash. The land that he's coming after is what he wants. He wants the land because he has a lien on Reuven's land, and he's coming to take the land. Shimon, to defend his position with the land and to keep the land, offers to pay him cash. And that's where, as Rami Bar Chama says, the Yotomim pipe up and say, you hurt our position by paying cash, and therefore we are not going to take care of you. Because, in essence, had he paid cash to the Yotomim, that's metaltalim. Metaltalim, as far as the Yotomim are concerned, are not mishabdei to the Baal Chov, are not an obligation towards the Baal Chov. And that's what the Yotomim are basically saying to him. Listen, if you had paid with land, that'd be one thing, because land is encumbered. It has a lien from the creditor. And you would have, if you had given it back to us, we would have to give it to the creditor. On the other hand, with regards to the cash that you owed our father, we had an outstanding loan over here. Had you just paid us the money, then we would not have been obligated then to pay the creditor for that, because it would have been cash. And cash and metaltalim of the Yotomim are not encumbered to the creditor. The only thing that's encumbered to him is land, because metaltalim diatme lo mishabdeh. Metaltalim of the Yotomim are not obligations towards the creditor. So what the Yotomim are saying is, by you paying the cash to pay out the creditor, you did not help us out. You actually hurt us. And we want to still collect on the loan now. Because had you given us the cash, we would have kept the cash and wouldn't have gone to the creditor. So basically what the Yotomim are saying to him is, we're not going to make you whole on this, because you actually hurt us. You hurt us by paying the cash directly to the Baal Chov instead of to us. And therefore, we're not going to reimburse you for this loss. So as Rashi says here, V'ya Baal Chov shel Avinu misulak mimenu, she'en lanu karka. We have no land to pay here. V'amot lo haya l'chalitein. And you shouldn't have paid money here. T'metav t'liyat me lo mishtabdei de Baal Chov. V'ata gam ata en lecha lachzor aleinu al achrayut. She'en lanu karka me avinu. Since we have no karka over here, there's nothing to come in terms of the recourse over here, so you can't collect on it. What the Yotomim are saying is, you put up money that we wouldn't have put up, and therefore you caused yourself a loss. And since you caused yourself a loss, therefore we shouldn't have to reimburse you for that. And you owe us, in a sense, you owe us the money still from the loan outstanding to our father. And the fact that you paid the creditor, that was a mistake. You shouldn't have done that.
No problem.
You shouldn't have paid the creditor. And therefore, if we collect the land and take it back from you, there's no achrayut. We're not going to pay you for that. And Shimon, in this case, is going to lose out. He's going to lose out because now he had paid out the Baal Chov, and he owes the money still to the Yotomim. A loss for him to pay out the cash, because the Yotomim are not going to reimburse him for that payment. So now, Amar Rava, so again, like in the other cases, Rava says to Rami Bar Chama, I pikeach idach, if this individual was smart, meaning Shimon, megabe luhu ni'alayu ara, then what he will do is pay them with land, v'hada gabe la minayu, and then he'll take it back from them, kid Rav Nachman, like the principle of Rav Nachman, which is, damar Rav Nachman, amar rabba baravua. So this is similar to Shibuda de Rabbi Notan, but it's a Shibuda de Rabbi Notan for Yotomim, because it only works with karka, does not work with metaltalin. Which is that, Amar Rav Nachman, Amar Rav Vua, Yotomim shegavu karka b'chuvat avien, Yotomim who take property for loans that are outstanding to their father, then Baal Chov chozer v'govat amehen. Then creditors of the father can now take that karka. Because The only reason the Yitomim had rights to this land is because their father was a creditor. So their father as a creditor exercises his rights, and they take in the karka. Then he's also a debtor at the same time. So the creditor of Reuven has a lien on Reuven's properties. So if Reuven also has a lien on someone else's properties, then through the transitive property, the creditors of Reuven also have a lien on any properties that Reuven has a lien on to someone else. And therefore, when they collect the land, that land can pass through to the other creditors. In this instance, it happens to be Shimon, who is the creditor. He'll give the land back to them in lieu of payment of the debt that he owes to their father. But then he has recourse because the father guaranteed the land. If it was taken from him in debt, he can take something back. So he'll be a creditor to the credit that Reuven has. So Shimon's a creditor in the sense that he has recourse promised to him for Reuven. And Reuven's a creditor to Shimon because Zakfan alav b'milveh. So then when Shimon pays off his loan, he can then come in as a creditor and take the land back. So that's what the Rova says. That's the smart thing to do over here. So that's what he should do. He should collect it like Rav Nachman. Now this has a number of ramifications, one of which Tosafot raises over here, which is, whenever the debtor has cash, we said that it's an obligation on the debtor to put up cash before he pays out of land. Because we're not going to obligate the creditor to go and monetize the land so he gets his cash. That obligation is on the debtor's side, not on the creditor's side. Now, if the debtor has no cash, then the land is in lieu of payment because he's not going to get anything otherwise. But in a case where he does have cash, we told him he has to pay cash where that's available to him. Tosafot comes up here with a solution to say why Shimon has the right to pay off here in land instead of cash. Rova says that Pikeach, if he's really smart, he'll pay them with land instead of cash. Well, what do you mean he'll pay them with land instead of cash? If he has cash, then he's got to pay cash. He's a debtor. Debtors have to pay in cash. Where does he get a right giving them land instead of cash? So Tosafot comes up with this principle that the only time we say that the debtor has to pay cash instead of land is when all things are equal for him. When giving of the cash and payment through the land will end up in the same scenario. So because of that, Tosafot says here the debtor will be hurt. If he pays cash, he'll be out money, and the recourse will not be able to collect on. If he pays land, then he will get the money back. So for him, there's a significant difference between paying in land and paying in cash. Over there, the Chachamim did not institute that you must pay cash to the creditor instead of land. And that's why he has the right to pay in land over here. Others suggest over here, there's actually a difference. When do you have an obligation to pay the creditor in cash? That's when the creditor extended cash to you. And then we say, he paid cash. You have to return cash. That's not what happened over here. The credit was extended here, was extended because of the land that was paid. Reuven handed Shimon land, and then they established a loan based on that. So Reuven never actually handed Shimon cash that he lent him. It was in lieu of payment for the land. But that means what Reuven handed to Shimon was land. So in this case, what he could give back is land, because he got land. He can hand land back. So that's other Rishonim suggest along these lines, which is, that the reason the takana of cash first doesn't apply here is because there was no cash. The creditor never gave cash that he can demand from the debtor cash back. So just like he gave him land up front, so too he can give him land back. And that's what's called ipikeach, if he's smart. Others suggest that ipikeach is just a way to threaten the yitomim. Not that he literally pays them in land. He just negotiates with them and says, listen, if I pay you in land, you're going to lose everything. So let's settle this without having to do this. Not that he actually exercises that right and gives the land, but he uses that as a threat. Or still others suggest that the pikeach is exactly that. He convinces the yitomim to take land, even though they don't have to. And that's why he's being smart over here, is that he gets the yitomim to take the land in payment instead of cash, because then he can take the land back for his recourse. So all different ways of explaining how it works here, even though technically the debtor should have to pay cash and not land. All right, next case. Amar Rabbo. Reuven shemachar kol stotav l'Shimon. He sells all of his land to Shimon. And then Shimon goes ahead and sells one piece of land to Levi. Now, Reuven's creditor shows up and says, I have a lien on all this land here because Reuven owes me money and he has no cash to pay me. So now you guys are responsible. He has a choice. He can go after Shimon or he can go after Levi because he has liens on all of this property. All of Reuven's properties were encumbered to the creditor. And so when the creditor comes, he can go after Shimon or he can go after Levi. Now the Gemara is going to qualify that and say that's not always the case. Rashi says over here that when Reuven sold the property to Shimon, he sold it in a single shtar. He sold it in one document. It was in a sale for the entirety of his property in one shot to Shimon. Because otherwise, as Rashi points out, if he sold it in stages or pieces, then each sale would not have been encumbered to Reuven's creditors. Because when Shimon bought the first piece of land, there was still land left behind from which the creditor could claim. And we have a principle that the creditor is not allowed to go after land that is mishubad or encumbered or is sold if there's free and clear property. So in this instance, when each piece of land that he bought, he can say that the next piece of land that he left behind was the land that would pay off the creditor. And the land that he took was free and clear, quote unquote, because he insured to leave behind what the creditor could take from. So Rashi says if he did that, then only the last piece of land would be encumbered over here. And then it would depend on who owns the last piece of land. If Levi didn't buy the last piece of land, then it wouldn't matter. He could say the same thing that Shimon said, which is, I left over the land that was really encumbered to the creditor, which is that last piece of land. So that's what Rashi says over here. That's a case that it was a shtar echad. Tosafot already plays around with that and says, maybe not. And he quotes, lo nehira l'rabi. He says that it doesn't seem like that to my Rebbe. Rebbe here is the Rosh Mishans, the Bala Tosafot here, many times is the Rosh Mishans. Early in Masechta, we saw they quoted the Rashba a lot in the Tosfot. That's from Shimshon ben Avraham, the Rosh Mishans, who seems to be the author of many of the Tosafot, especially in the latter half of Tubot. So over here, when he says Rabbi, means the Rosh Mishans. The Matzi, Shimon lemeimarle, my time I remember running any frame nechassim mishubadim, makom sheish b'nei chorim, v'avilu en ziborit mishum takana de lokeach rishon, because that helps out the first lokeach. Ana v'hatakanta lo nechali. So what he says is, I can decline, just like, again, like in football where you can decline the penalty when it doesn't help you. So it's over here, the first buyer can decline the Takanat Chachamim where it doesn't help him. In this instance, the reason the Chachamim said that if you leave property behind, you can't collect from property that was already sold, that was for the protection of the buyer. So if the buyer goes in and he buys property, he can always say, I left behind property, and therefore you can't come after me. So that's for Shimon's benefit that it's done. Over here, it's not to Shimon's benefit to say that. Because if he doesn't say that, then the creditor can go after Levi. So Shimon basically says this, I decline the Takana, because it's not to my benefit over here. And since I decline the Takana, now you can equally go after Shimon and Levi. So that's what Tosafot suggests over here, that maybe even in two shtarot, or three shtarot, even if it was sold sequentially instead of one shot, the Shimon could still decline that Takana, and the creditor could go after either Shimon or Levi over here based on that because it's for the protection of Shimon. On the other hand, the Tosafot himself comes back and says, I think that Rashi is right because when Levi buys from Shimon, he could always say, I went out of my way to buy the property and leave you over property over there. And I have the same rights that Shimon. When Shimon sold me the rights, he sold me the rights that he had in this land. The rights that he had in his land was to say to the creditor, go to the other land. And I have that same right, because I purchased from him, and I made the same decision as Shimon. So Shimon can't decline the Takana, because I purchased that right in terms of buying this land that was bought earlier instead of later. And therefore, Levi has this kind of right of refusal to say, no, you can't decline the Takana over here. Although in the end, Tosafot says, Miu yitachin liot, ratzami zeh goveh, afilu v'shnei shtarot. He does come up with a scenario in which there are two sales here that it would work. even though he bought the land, that wasn't the last land purchased. In a case that the last piece of land is idit. The last piece of land was the best quality property. And the one that Levi took was Benonit. So then we can make a claim that Levi didn't leave behind Benonit property, which is the core claim of the Baal Chov. The creditor collects out of Benonit, middle range property. So since he collects out of middle range property, Levi didn't leave behind any middle range property, only better quality property. And in doing so, then he doesn't have a claim to knock off the creditor because he took what the creditor was after, and that was the Benonit. So Tosfot does come up with a scenario in which it could be multiple shtarot, although in the end he seems to uphold Rashi's idea that it's a shtar echad over here, that it was all sold at once. So now, the creditor of Reuven comes and decides, do I want to grab it from Shimon, or do I want to grab it from Levi? Rashi over here says, Va'af agav dil lacha Levi lebenunit zumi Reuven, v'niach etzlo zibrot, lo yachol b'chol Reuven lachzor Levi. So even though if Levi had bought the Benonit directly from Reuven and left behind Ziborit, lower quality property, the creditor then could not come after Levi because he left behind property with Reuven. Nevertheless, Avalkan, Shimon la Balchovohu. Here, Shimon is not the debtor in this scenario. Va'afalav mikoach tirfahuba. And therefore, when the creditor comes here, he's going after Shimon the same way he's going after Levi. And therefore, Levi can't push him off onto Shimon and say, listen, I took the Benonit, but I left behind Ziborit. Go take from the Ziborit of Shimon. He doesn't have a right to say that because he is just not the debtor. And he didn't buy from the debtor. So in that scenario, Levi has no rights to declare and say that Shimon has to pay from what he left behind because the creditor has equal rights to go after Levi as he does after Shimon. And as assuming here that there's no free and clear land left behind, since he has to go after property that he has a lien on, he has a right to go after either party where the lien is. Rashi goes as far as to say that when it's Ratzah Goveh Mizeh, Ratzah Migoveh Mizeh, that he can even take Idit from Shimon over taking from Levi. Because of the fact that now Shimon has stepped into the shoes of Reuven, the creditor has a right now to come after Shimon like he would come after Reuven, and he can say, I don't want to bother Levi. I'm going to take Idit from you before I go after the Benonit and Levi. Many of the other Rishonim disagree and say that if the Benonit is with Levi, he has to go to Levi. He only has a right to take Ziborit from Shimon or Benonit from Shimon over what was given to Levi. But in a case where Shimon left himself Idit, then the Baal Chov wouldn't have such a right. Although Rashi seems to indicate that the Baal Chov has a right to even go after the Idit in Shimon's hands. But now the Gemara qualifies that. It says, V'lo Amran el dezavna Benonit. That's only if Levi bought the middle range property, because that's what the creditor has a right to go after. Aval zavna idit v'ziborit. If he buys the better quality property or the lower quality property, Matzi Amarle, he says to the creditor now, he could say to Reuven's creditor, V'hachi tarchi v'zvini ara delo chazi lecha. That's why I did not buy the property. That was your main claim. Your primary claim is against the Benonit. So I went out of my way to either buy the lower or higher quality property to leave behind the property that you would go and take. So in that case, he can push him back onto Shimon and say, I left Benonit behind. And even if he bought the middle range property, we don't say that. As long as he didn't leave behind Benonit that was equal to it. If he left behind Benonit that was equal to the level of property that he bought, then again he can say, I left behind sufficient Benonit for you to take the claim out of Shimon. Shabak Benonit to Kavata. If he left behind Benonit on the same level, now it has to be the same level. It can't be Benonit of a different level, because then it all becomes relative. Because if it's Benonit on a different level, then that Benonit will change either to Ziborit to Bidit because of its relative relationship to the Benonit. So it has to be exactly the same quality of property that it leaves behind. Says, I left you space to collect from. Tosfot asks over here, lav dafka kamar lahay nishna. That's lav dafka that he makes that claim. The lo sheach lamar hachi ala gabi balim. That's only true by the original owners. The lo lagabi lokeach rishon. Not by the first buyer. As David just pointed out, that's exactly what Rabba's din is. Rabba's din is that when it comes to lokeach rishon, the creditor has a right to go after either party. And he's not governed by these rules. These rules only apply when you're buying directly from the debtor. Can you say I left stuff behind? But if you're buying from a purchaser who purchased from the debtor, those rights no longer exist. And the creditor has rights to go after either party if they're holding Beinonit over here. So he says, therefore, v'ikar tai mahavi. So what's the real reason? What's the real reason that Levi can make this claim? Lo'avi el mishum ma machar rishon l'sheni kol zkut shetavol yado. So what I mentioned before, that when Shimon sells to Levi, he not only sells him the land, he also sells him any rights that he would have in this instance. And just like Shimon has a right to push the Baal Chov to whichever Beinonit he wants, meaning that if he has other Beinonit, he can push him off to it. When Shimon sold that to Levi, not only did he sell him the land, the Beinonit, he also sold him the rights that come with that Beinonit. What are those rights? That if there's other Beinonit, he can push the creditor onto that other Beinonit. So because Shimon empowered Levi in this case, that's why Levi over here can say go back to Shimon. Not because he owns Beinonit on the same level, but because he got the right that Shimon would have in this instance, the right that Shimon has in this instance to say, I want to keep this piece of Beinonit, you take that piece of Beinonit. And that he could say to the creditor, when he sold that, he also sold that right to Levi, and now Levi is exercising that right to say, go back to the other Beinonit. So that's why he can make such a claim over here. All right, so now we had Rami Bar Chama bringing these cases. Now we had Rabbo bring the case. And now Amar Abaye. Ruvain Shemachar Sadeh to Shimon. Ruvain sells a field to Shimon be'achrayot with recourse. Vata Baal Chov de Ruvain v'katarif laminei. And now the creditor of Ruvain comes and takes it from Shimon, as would be expected in this case, where there was a lien on the property. Ruvain had a creditor. Shimon knew about that. That's probably why he bought with recourse. And so therefore, when the creditor comes and takes it from him, he's going to go back to Ruvain and ask him for his money back or get paid out of it. Dinuhu daza Ruvain umafatzile. Ruvain has a right to intercede over here. Velo matze amarle la bal dvarim didiat. And the creditor can't say, you have nothing to do with this over here. Mishum damarle, the mafkat minei alai hadar. Because Ruvain says, when you take this out of Shimon's hands, you know who he's coming to afterwards? Back to me. So through the transitive property, I'm actually on the hook over here, and I'm the one who's actually paying you here. Even though you're getting the property from Shimon, Shimon's going to come back to me and ask for the recourse or get reimbursed for the fact that you took the property from him. So in the end, you're really taking the money from me. So in this case, I have a right to get involved here because of that. V'ikadamre, and some say, afilu shalo b'achrayut dami. Even without achrayut, even if he didn't sell with recourse, so even though he doesn't have a monetary claim against me, he has a moral claim against me, which is, I sold him property that's going to end up getting taken out of his hand, and he's not going to want to be in transactions with me where he's going to end up losing. He didn't get the warranty, probably should have gotten a guarantee for it, but even though when he didn't do that, he's still going to look at me and say, you're right, I have no monetary claim against you, but look, I ended up now losing out because of you. And so I don't want that to happen. And therefore, there's an ikadamre that Ruvain's able to interject and say, I am a party to this transaction. Now, what does that mean that Ruvain can get involved over here? Now, obviously, Ruvain is not coming in to pay cash. In the past, when we said mefatzile to pay cash, you can convince him not to take the land by paying cash. Ruvain is obviously not interceding here to pay cash. Because if Ruvain had cash, the creditor of Ruvain won't be going after Shimon, because he would have gotten the cash from Ruvain directly. The fact that he went after the property means that Ruvain has no cash. So what does it mean now that Ruvain has a right to intercede in this case? What rights does he have? So Rashi claims over here, he says, Ishtabali delo praticha, that Ruvain can come along and demand ishvua from the creditor. He can say to the creditor, take ishvua, that you didn't pay over here. So that's the right that he has, or the right that he's exercising over here, that he can intercede and exercise that right to ask for a shvua. A debtor is allowed to ask the creditor for a shvua. So the debtor, Ruvain, intercedes over here and says, I want a shvua from you that you didn't collect. Or, Rashi says, he has offsetting loans. Ruvain has other transactions that involve this creditor, And you say, I want to offset those against each other, don't go after Shimon. So that's something that's unique to Reuven. Tosafot asks and says, why do I need Reuven for that? Shimon can make the same demand. Shimon has the same right to ask the creditor for a shvuah, because he's collecting from land that is mishubad. And we saw that before in the Mishnah. If you want to collect as a creditor from encumbered land, you have to take a shvuah to collect from encumbered land. So Shimon has the same right to demand a shvuah from the creditor as does Reuven. So then what is the benefit of Reuven interceding over here? What does Reuven do that Shimon himself can't do? So there are many suggestions by the Rishonim. You can see there's a very large Tosafot over here trying to deal with that. But let's go through some of the scenarios that the Rishonim suggest as to where Reuven might have rights that Shimon doesn't otherwise have. One of them might be in a case where Shimon has some sort of relationship with the creditor of Reuven, where he said, I won't demand a shvuah from you. So Shimon waived his right to ask for a shvuah from the creditor of Reuven. But Reuven didn't. So in that case, Shimon can't ask for a shvuah, but Reuven could ask for a shvuah. And so in that case, Reuven has powers that Shimon doesn't otherwise have. Or, in a case where Shimon says, Neman alai, the creditor of Reuven, I believe him. And therefore, either you don't have to take a shvuah, or I'm willing to accept his word, like the word of two edim. So again, if Shimon granted those rights to the creditor of Reuven, that doesn't bind Reuven. And Reuven can intercede here and make demands that Shimon can't make because he does not have that same relationship or those same guarantees to the creditor of Reuven. So that's one way to explain why Reuven might have powers that Shimon doesn't have, where for whatever reason, Shimon relinquished his rights. So when Shimon relinquishes his rights, Reuven can intercede and say, I still hold to my rights, and I'm going to exercise my rights over here. The other possibility that Tosafot suggests over here and rejects is where the Edim or something over here is a Karov l'Shimon. They are relatives of Shimon, but they are not relatives of Reuven. So if they come and testify on Shimon's behalf, they are Noger b'davar, because they are relatives. But if they testify on behalf of Reuven, then they are not considered to be Krovim because they don't have that relationship. In that case, Tosafot says that you don't say that, because Tosafot proves over here that any case in which you get a benefit from the testimony of the other party, even though it's not direct, the testimony is not directly about you, that's still considered to be a Karov and Nogeh B'davar. So even though technically the testimony here won't affect Shimon directly, but it'll affect Reuven directly, or vice versa, both parties are affected by the testimony. And since they're affected by the testimony, the Krovim make a difference in this case. So then Tosafot makes a suggestion that Reuven can make a claim that Shimon can't make, which is Mizuyafu. The shtar is a forgery. Shimon can't make that claim because Shimon doesn't know whether the shtar is a forgery or not. He wasn't there when the document was entered into. Reuven, who's a party to this document, can make such a claim that it is Mizuyaf. So therefore, in cases where the debtor is the direct party, the debtor can make a claim that the shtar is a forgery, and therefore the creditor would have to go and be Mikayim the shtar. And we would demand of him to be Mikayim the shtar. On the other hand, in cases where it's Yitomim, or it is someone who purchased a lokeach from Reuven, they don't have a right to declare it's Mizuyaf, even if the shtar is not Mikuyam, he doesn't have to be Mikayim the shtar again because doesn't have to bring the Edim in, because once the shtar is mikuyam, we assume that it's a good shtar. We don't assume it's a forgery. The only one who has a right to make a direct claim against the party is the one who is a party to the document. He can claim it's a forgery and force the creditor to be mikayim the shtar. We don't automatically assume that it's kilu nechura edutan debeitin and it's a good contract. That's only true when you're dealing with third parties. But when you're dealing with the debtor himself, the debtor himself can say, it is a forgery, and I'm going to ask you to be Mikayim the Shtar. Therefore, Tosafot says, that claim that Reuven makes, Shimon doesn't have a right to. And that's something that Reuven could add over here. So Reuven's allowed to intercede and make a claim in Mizuyafu, and then he'd have to be Mikayim the Shtar, something that Shimon can't do. In the end, Tosafot backs off of this a little bit and says that maybe Beit Din would be Toein on their behalf in this instance, that it is Mizuyaf, even in a case where they don't have the right to do it. Sometimes where they don't have a right to do it, Beit Din does it for them because the debtor himself would have such a right. Since the debtor has that right, Beit Din will intercede. At first, Tosafot suggested that that's not the case. In the end, he almost turns back on that suggestion and says maybe Beit Din can. If that's the case, then this difference does not exist between Reuven and Shimon. Both of them could make the claim. Reuven could make the claim himself. Shimon can't make the claim, but Beit Din would make the claim on his behalf, because since Reuven could do it, Beit Din will make that on behalf of Shimon. That would not be a difference between Reuven and Shimon. And some Rishonim simply say there is no difference between Reuven and Shimon. It's just that Reuven is the Baal Davar over here. And many times a person is mistafe mine. He's embarrassed to lie to the person who knows the truth. So even though Shimon and Reuven have the same claim, when facing Shimon, he's not embarrassed because Shimon doesn't know the facts. On the other hand, with regards to Reuven, who knows the facts, he actually might be embarrassed, and therefore we allow Reuven to enter the fray because of that mitigating factor. And the Rosh puts it even simpler. He says that different people have different capabilities when it comes to making arguments or in presenting their positions to Beit Din, and therefore we let Reuven and Shimon present it because we don't know who's going to come up with a better claim or a better presentation in Beit Din. So again, over here, all of the Mefarshim are trying to come up with a reason why Reuven needs to intercede in the case. What can he do that Shimon is not empowered to do in this instance? Okay, one more case. Amar Abaye. Reuven shemachar sadeh l'Shimon shelo ba'achrayut. So in this case, Reuven sold property to Shimon without recourse. But yatsu alav asikim. And all of a sudden, there start to circulate rumors about these individuals who are making claims about the land. They're showing up and saying that it wasn't Reuven's land to sell. This is our land. We're coming to take the land. Ad shelo hechzik ba, before he takes possession of the land, yachol lachzor bo, then Shimon has a right to back out of the transaction. Mishich hechzik ba, eina yachol lachzor bo. Once he takes possession of the land, he cannot go back on it. Mishum damar le, Chaita de Kitri, Savart de Kabalat. You took a bag or a sack full of knots. Now, whether this means that the bag, basically you saw that it was a bag full of air, and you bought the bag full of air, if that's what he's saying, or is he saying here that you have a bag that has knots tied around it, meaning that it was with lots of holes, and they tied string around it, so you saw exactly what you're getting. You're not getting a high quality piece over here. You're getting a piece of property that had risks involved with it. That's why there's no recourse over here. I sold it to you without recourse because you knew, you understood what was coming to you. And since you saw it and accepted it, that's your issue. You took on all the risks associated with the property. Now, me'emat machzikba. When does he take possession? When is that line? So when it says, mechidayish amitzrei, when he walks the borders. When he walks around the borders, that's taking possession. Ikedamre, some say, afilu b'achrayut nami. Even if he sold it to him with recourse, and then all of a sudden these rumors start to circulate, or these people start to come and say that he sold you land that he didn't own, even in that case, he cannot back out of the transaction. Damarle, because Reuven will say to him, achvi tirfech v'shalem lach. Show me the document that the land was taken from you, and I'll reimburse you. I promise to reimburse you, but that's only if the land is taken from you. Prove that it was taken from you. If it's taken from you, you're right. I'll take care of you. But until it's taken from you, don't come to me and say, oh, it might be taken from me. There are people making claims against it. That's not enough of a reason to back out of the transaction. I'll guarantee it. I'll take care of it. That's only if it gets taken from you. And therefore, even if it's sold with recourse, he doesn't have a right to back out of the transaction. Now, Tosafot over here discusses, what does it mean over here? Achlo hevzikba lachol lachzorbo. Omer Yonotam, Rabbi Yonotam says over here, vafilu natan ma'ot. Even if he paid cash. Generally, cash is one of the kinyanim that you're allowed to do for land. Cash is a full-fledged kinyan with regards to land. If he paid cash over here, why do we have to wait for achlo hevzikba? What does hevzikba have to do with it? So he says, in the kagon, delokanu bekaspo. It's in an area where money doesn't work as a purchase for land, shekotvin et hashtar, because in this area or this place, that is not considered to be the kinyan because they have to write a shtar, and without the shtar, it's not a kinyan. Tlokanu ad sheyichtov et hashtar. V'kamash v'lan diyachol umutar lachzor bo. Now, what Rabbeinu Tam says over here, it's not that he's allowed to back out of it, but he's mutar to back out of it, because sometimes you can see this in other places in Shas, which is that even though in certain circumstances there was no kinyan, we still have this concept called Misha Parah. that God, who took retribution from the people of Sodom and from other bad people, should take retribution from you for backing out of the transaction. So even though you're not bound by the transaction because of a kinyan, but because you're not keeping your word over here, you're nemanut in the transaction, we assign this curse to you because you're backing out of transactions. And that's just not the right way to be. By the letter of the law, you're right to back out of it, but by the spirit of the law to back out of it, it's not right here. And you're only backing out of it because you got information afterwards, and we're not going to let you do that. Now, Tosafot suggests, and Rabbeinu Tam suggests over here, that's only true when we're talking about price fluctuations. The reason he's backing out of it is because the property lost value or gained value, and the other side's trying to back out of it. So even though there's no kinyan over here, it's not the right thing to back out of it because of fluctuations in price. And there we're going to say Misha Parah. But in this instance, where there's a real reason to back out of it, there's new information here, Tosafot says we don't say Misha Parah. Here you can back out of the transaction. Not only can you, mutar, you're allowed to back out of it, and we will not apply the curse to you. You do not have to stand by your word. Because this is a type of information where kinyan matters to the scenario over here. Now, Tosafot asks again. The Gemara over here says, "Me'ema tavi chazaka." When is it a chazaka? What do you mean, when is it a chazaka? We have a Mishnah Mifureshet that tells us what chazaka is. How do you have a chazaka? Tema, my kami bailet. V'hi akati lo ashminan dinei chazaka ha'matznitani. It's an explicit Mishnah as to how you get chazaka. Na'al, gadar, uparatz, kosho. He puts up a fence. He breaks down a fence. He does something to lock it. He does things that show or demonstrate his ownership on the land. That's how you create a chazaka. Kosho, arizu, chazaka. What do I need them to tell me here? What's the chazaka over here? What do you mean, what's the chazaka? It's a Mishnah Mifureshet in Baba Batra that tells you exactly how you do this. V'yeshlamar dahachi bai. So Tosafot says, this is the question over here. That, me'ema tabi chazaka, he already paid cash. So in terms of paying cash, cash is actually a way to exercise chazaka. That's a way to complete a transaction with land. So he said over here, the Rabbeinu Tam says, well, it's a place where they didn't give a shtar. So what we have over here is a kinyan that happened, but it didn't really happen, which is that you already paid cash. So in terms of kinyanim, you are further along than simply coming to a piece of land and saying, I want to make a chazaka on it. That's what the Mishnah in Baba Batra is talking about. Where you have no kinyan besides this, how do I establish chazaka? That's now gadar uparatz. Those are the ways that you do it, so we have that. But in this case where you already paid cash, then when does the chazaka kick in? I mean, what does it mean, when does the chazaka kick in? When does that consider to be something that will complete the transaction, even if you don't do a full-fledged chazaka? What is that? Daisha mitzre. If you walk the land, if you walk the borders. So if you walk the borders by itself, that might not have been sufficient to create a chazaka. But combined with the payment of cash, that will be enough of a chazaka to say that this is an irreversible transaction. Right. And that's what the Gemara is after over here. So afagav degriya minal gadaru paratz, havi chazaka over ika kesef, kiri pirashti. Says even though this is not as strong as nal gadaru paratz, over here, combined with kesef, that would work. On the other hand, the Rivam gives an alternative, which is, that when the negotiations are going on, while they're still in the deal mode, then a person can back out. The transaction is not finalized until what? That's what they want to know. When are the masav matan? When are the negotiations over? Because as long as you're still negotiating, you have a right to back out. Once the negotiations are over, then you don't have a right to back out. What is considered to be the delineating line for the negotiations to be over? That's what the Rivam says is Daisha Mitzre. If you walk the borders, then you are considered to have the negotiations are complete, and you no longer have a right to back out of the transaction. We're not dealing with the money. It's simply a question of, while the negotiations, you have a right of backing out. Here, since you are done with the negotiations, you no longer have a right to back out of it. So that's what the question is. When does that terminate? When do the negotiations terminate? And that's what the Gemara's question is over here. So now, the conclusion of the Gemara is, Ika Damre, that even with Achrayut, he can still say to him, wait until afterwards. Although, obviously, the first Lashon says that if you sold with recourse, then basically selling with recourse is that the buyer makes it clear that he doesn't want property that has problems. The fact that he demanded recourse from the seller tells you that I don't want property that's not free and clear. So in that instance, the first Lashon believes that only without Achrayut can he not back out of it. But if there's Achrayut, you can say to him, take your land back, you know, because I declared myself. What did I declare? I declare I don't want property with problems. That's why I asked you for recourse. The Ikad Amri says, even with recourse, still, even though that you declare that you didn't want to take property, nevertheless, the seller can still say to you, when it's taken, I'll warranty it. Before that, you can't. And that's the machloket between them, which is, these two lashonot, is what does Achrayut do? Is Achrayut a declaration by the buyer that I want to have nothing to do with land that has problems, and therefore he can back out of it right away? Or is it simply a warranty? And if the warranty gets triggered, then he can go make the claim against the warranty. But before that point, you don't have a right to come in and ask for the warranty before there was any damages done to you. Okay, with that, we'll end at the Mishnah on Sadi Gimel Amud Aleph.